Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And from Bryce Downey and Lankoff, we have Rich Lankoff. He is our show attorney if we ever should need one. Do we get a discount if we ever do?
You get one free.
It'll be
get out of jail free. Card.
That'll be for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be smart money would be on you. Yes.
He also does Legal Face Off, which is an awesome podcast. And we have been dying to talk about this Bill Cosby mistrial. We waited to have you in the studio because we had a bunch of questions about it. All right. Where to begin other than Bill Cosby's case? They could not reach a unanimous verdict. The jurors could not. How many holdouts were there? Was there one person?
Well, there's been at least one that's been identified. There's only one that's spoken, and that person has said that he would vote to convict. So we don't know yet how many, what the count was. And that's obviously one of the most interesting components.
Will we
components.
Know that?
Depends. They are free to talk, although today the parties are in court in Massachusetts on an order preventing them from speaking. So depending on what the judge does today, we'll determine whether they speak. And you can be assured that given the notoriety of the case, if the judge allows them to speak, we'll see them all over the media.
What determines the duration by which they just decide, well, they're never going to come to an agreement? You would think a major case like this, the judge would give it a little more time, but he didn't.
Yeah, the judge gave them three times. Now, there's no rule, but you know, usually after three, they said they were hopelessly deadlocked was the words they used.
Yeah.
After three, you know, it's up to the judge's discretion. He could have kept sending them back, but they deliberated for 52 hours,
yeah,
which is an extraordinarily long period of time. The judge at that point was convinced that they would not come to an agreement, so he decided to mistrial.
And do you want that holdout? Like, say I think I'm the only one who thinks he's guilty and I will not change my mind. I don't want to just have to go, all right, whatever.
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, the jury system is based on the idea that one person can hold out, and if they don't feel that there is a conviction warranted, a mistrial is appropriate. It's unfortunate, but I think it shows some of the benefits of the jury system that, to your point, you can't just say, given the peer pressure of the others, well, I'm going to give in because people's lives are on the line.
Rich, help me with this. At some point, the jury asked the judge, they said, we need a clear description or definition of what molestation or rape exactly is. So what does that mean when they want to know that? Is it the fine-tuning of the wording? Is that what they're trying to figure out?
You know, there's so many different reasons why jurors ask questions, and in that case, when they're asking for a definition, it tends to indicate that, you know, they're not sure, obviously, what exactly the legal definition of assault or rape is. That tends to help the defense in those situations,
yeah,
because, you know, if they were not asking those questions, it would seem more cut and dry and that,
yeah,
they were,
sure,
leaning towards the prosecution. But when we heard in the days leading up to Saturday that they were asking those questions, the feeling was that those questions were lending themselves towards an acquittal or at least a mistrial.
Right.
Okay, so mistrial happens. I can't speak for Bill Cosby. I don't know what was going through his mind, but I know I automatically thought, well, he's going to walk on this. A mistrial doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be another one, but this judge does want there to be another trial.
Well, it's the state who came out and decided that, announced already that they're going to try it again. So it's really based on the prosecution who announced right after, almost immediately, that they would retry Cosby. They said they would do that within a year, which is pretty quick. You know, in the Phil Spector case, for example, the initial case resulted in a mistrial. 18 months later, they convicted him. So the DA, Kevin Steele, who ran on a platform of prosecuting Cosby, announced Saturday that they would retry him, which, you know, brings a whole host of other issues.
More money, more time, more jurors.
Exactly true. I mean, the expense of trying the case again is going to be borne by the taxpayers. And really, the second trial, in my opinion, will be to Cosby's advantage. Why? For obvious reasons. The state has already shown their cards.
Right.
They brought forth all of their evidence. Remember, the defense in this case only put on one witness,
yeah,
and that witness testified for 5 minutes. Then,
yeah,
the defense rested. So now the defense has the advantage of having seen all of the state's case and evidence and not having had to show their cards. So in my opinion, prosecuting Cosby the second time will be a very uphill battle.
Really? Initially, I think I said this to you because we talked to you a couple of weeks ago about this case. I said, I think I have a feeling that if the jury comes back quickly, that's going to mean Bill Cosby is going to do some jail time. But the longer they deliberate, the more it's in the favor of Mr. Cosby. And you saw it that same way, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and I think that showed to be the case. You know, there's no science necessarily to how long a jury is out and what that means for the prosecution or defense. But I think to your point, and as we talked about, the longer they were deliberating, the more it seemed like they were going to find a reason to let Cosby walk or at least result in a mistrial. And in this case, that was the way things went.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for the woman who is coming forward with this. It just seems unfair that it didn't come to a resolution.
Yeah, she obviously went through a lot in coming forward, and she had her life exposed. It's often very difficult for victims of this kind of crime to come forward and have the prosecutors or you know have the defense go after her the way they did in this case. Yeah, very unfortunate. Her attorney has come out, as has Gloria Allred, who's the attorney in the civil case for many of the women, and have said that we're going to remain strong. We're going to go forward. Again, the question of whether the retrial will be successful comes down to the degree to which the prosecution changes their strategy. You know, the big thing in this case, one of the big turning points in this case was the judge not allowing the other accusers from testifying. As we
Except
talked about,
for one.
Only one testified.
Right.
There are, you know, 50 plus who can testify. That comes down to whether the judge in the next case will allow what's called prior bad act testimony. Basically, you cannot introduce prior bad act testimony as evidence of crime in a current case, but one exception in criminal cases is where the prior acts will show a pattern of behavior, an MO, and the prosecution has to convince the judge the next time that these accusers should be let in because Cosby's MO,
right.
his pattern, is drugging women and having sexual or assaulting them sexually.
Right. Didn't the judge himself say upon completion of the case that this woman deserves a verdict? That after all she's been through, win, lose, or draw, she deserves, well, I shouldn't say her draw, win or lose.
I didn't
she
see deserves, that quote. Did he say that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, the you know, Cosby's attorneys came out very critical of the judge.
Yeah, right.
So did Camille Cosby, which if I can just read this statement that she issued once the declaration of a mistrial happened. Here is what Camille Cosby said. Someone else spoke this for her. She didn't say it, but this is her quote. How do I describe the district attorney heinously and exploitively ambitious? How do I describe the judge overtly arrogant and collaborating with the district attorney? How do I describe the counsels for the accusers totally unethical? How do I describe many but not all general media blatantly vicious entities that continually disseminated intentional omissions of truths for the primary purpose of greedily selling sensationalism at the expense of a human life? Is this a good statement for her to make when this is going to go to trial again?
I would certainly not counsel my client to speak that way.
Wow.
Of these people, especially the judge. You know, you don't want to speak ill will of the judge.
Because it's going to be the same judge for round two, right?
Well, not necessarily. One of the things that they, in my opinion, should do is move the trial to another venue. In this case, it was, I think, in a venue where it was impossible to get jurors who didn't hear of it. Not that you'll get any jurors who haven't heard of this case, but
you just can't have a preconceived notion of what the verdict would be. You can have knowledge of the case, right?
Right.
That's acceptable.
Exactly. The standard is whether you can put aside your preconceived notions of guilt or innocence and decide on the merits of the case. But yeah, Wendy, I mean, those are, you know, I think very poor choice of words. But, you know, we're in the era of Trump where attacking the media is an effective tool, and that's one of the things they did. But yeah, a little bit surprising that they came out that strongly against all the parties after this verdict, or after this mistrial, I should say.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. Rich Lenkoff is here. If you'd like to join in, 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us there. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Rich Lenkoff is here. We're always baffled at why he comes in, but he's here, and we're discussing the law with him. I just want to quickly change something that I said earlier. I believed that it was the judge. I was under the belief that it was the judge who had said these words, but it was not. It was District Attorney Kevin Steele who said, and I quote, "She, the accuser, is entitled to a verdict in this case." He was very upset that a verdict wasn't reached, and he said that the accuser, after all she's been through, deserves a verdict.
Yeah, that's why I think I didn't hear it. But it wouldn't be surprising, by the way, to hear the judge say something like that, because, listen, you know, judges want verdicts. They don't want mistrials. They don't want to have to go through this again. So that's why the judge, you know, sent them back three separate times when they said that they were deadlocked.
Yep.
All right.
Play ball, Wendy.
Play ball.
That's my line.
All right.
There are so many things to talk about. You choose the one we're going to talk about. We have time to talk about one more case in the news.
Yeah, you know, this indictment on Friday of the teenager who was convicted of involuntary manslaughter for texting her boyfriend, who ultimately committed suicide. You know, that's a really interesting legal story.
Refresh people who may not know the story.
Yeah, so this was a judge in Massachusetts who convicted Michelle Carter of being involved with her boyfriend, Conrad Roy, who basically encouraged him to commit suicide, the judge decided. This was basically a virtual relationship that they had.
Both had mental illnesses or issues, from my understanding.
Yeah, the person who committed suicide certainly had a history of threatening suicide. There was evidence of multiple texts over many months of them discussing suicide. She explained to him how to kill himself using carbon monoxide, exactly, you know, the generator to buy and a lot of details. He ultimately got into his pickup truck at a Kmart parking lot and asphyxiated himself. Now, he texted her right before he killed himself, right before, you know, the final act. And this is what really the judge centered on in finding that she was engaged in wanton and reckless behavior. She, instead of saying to him, get out of the truck, or instead of calling someone, or instead of calling 911, what she said was, get back in the truck. Those three words, get back in, were what the judge centered on in finding that she was guilty of involuntary manslaughter. In addition, the fact that she texted a friend afterwards and admitted that she knew what she was doing, those were the that's what the evidence that the judge used in saying that this was more than just a relationship, more than just free speech.
Is this unprecedented, Rich? I'm sure there's been other cases where somebody didn't physically harm the other person, but through coercion convinced them to do something.
Yeah, obviously the difference in this case is that they were not together physically. They were miles apart. This
she
was done
did
by
text
phone.
Him at first, you know, you need to get some help. You need to talk to someone. And I'm not defending her in any way, shape, or form, but she had been hearing about his suicide attempts, and she's like, you really should go talk to somebody. Yeah. You really need some help. And he's like, I don't know if that's going to work. And at some point, she's like, okay, fine, do it.
Exactly true. I mean, she was trying to help him initially.
But she should have contacted his parents or legal authorities or something.
Yeah. Ultimately, what the judge found was that she displayed a consciousness of guilt, both by telling him to get back in the truck and by admitting to her friend afterwards. The words she used were, I helped ease him into it and told him it was okay. I was talking to him on the phone when he did it. I could have easily stopped him or called the police, but I didn't.
See why she was charged.
Right.
Right.
I mean,
there.
The fact that she knew what she was doing and admitted to a friend about it. Now, this friend, you know, the testimony was a little bit questionable, but ultimately the judge was convinced that because she was aware of what she was doing, she did nothing to stop it, and she affirmatively knew that it was wrong and that her actions, or lack thereof, led to his death. That's what differentiated the facts in this case.
Is this the kind of case that sets a precedent, whereas you would think, with social media being what it was, anyone now who's on Facebook and tells somebody, well, and kill yourself, couldn't they be held responsible if they
Yeah, that's the ultimate legal question. Does this establish a precedent? You know, you don't want a society where simply talking to people, especially about suicide, right? Because you do want to encourage people to talk to others who may be threatening suicide to speak about it. Are those people, is this now going to have a chilling effect on anyone who talks to someone else about suicide? The difference in this case, obviously, were those words she used, the consciousness of guilt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think with social media being what it is, cyberbullying what it is, and the availability of technology, this can establish a precedent that you don't have to be physically with someone to encourage them to commit suicide and therefore be charged with involuntary manslaughter.
Would this have turned out differently, the verdict, had there not been texts to prove what she was saying. If it was just a, you know, phone conversation and then a witness says, well, she told him this.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that you had texts.
Be careful what you text people.
No question. I mean, they were very explicit texts. Obviously, they were submitted into evidence, so it was black and white. It wasn't testimony of one person against another. Like in the Cosby case, right? That came down to largely a he said, she said. In this case, you have the black and white text as hard evidence that she knew what she was doing and didn't do anything to prevent it.
Isn't it interesting that depending on what the case is, sometimes texts can or cannot be used as evidence? It always depends on what exactly the case is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes privilege attaches to texts like any other communication. You know, we've seen in Illinois lots of examples of people trying to delete texts. In
right.
the Barbara Burbetta case, for example, texts and emails were
well, this Glinowitz case that's going on right now, they're trying to decide exactly the validity of the text between the husband and wife,
right.
and if they can be used as evidence.
Right. And, you know, generally, the standard is whether it's relevant, and the standard of relevance is pretty, you know, wide open. So usually texts are going to get in unless a privilege attaches. And, you know, despite people's attempts to delete them, they're always available, right?
Sure.
We all know that texts never go away, so a simple subpoena can reveal those texts.
You got to be careful. I mean, was it Yale that 10 kids who were accepted?
Harvard.
Harvard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew it was one of the Ivy League schools. And 10 people who were admitted to that campus put some terrible memes on this Facebook page, and they had their emissions pulled away from them.
Gone, yeah.
It's like, you got to be careful what's out there on social media and texts.
I mean, I think the advantage of this case, whether you agree or disagree with the conviction, you know, we all could agree, I think, that you have to be careful with the words you use. You have to be careful with texting, and especially, you know, very conscious of bullying. I mean, this was really a cyberbullying case that went, you know, went wrong. So I think that's a good takeaway.
That's Rich Lankoff. Legal Face Off is his podcast. You can find that on WGN Plus. It's always a good listen. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Wendy.
We'll take a quick break, news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.